Our gut health impacts everything from our immune system, our mood, our hormones, and our ability to become pregnant, stay pregnant, and have a healthy baby. It is at the root of so many issues, which is why we need to talk about it. In this episode, I interview naturopathic physician Dr. Kelsey Stang all about gut health and the microbiome in fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum. Our gut health is so important for all of the stages of baby making, and the microbiome plays a major role in its health. Dr. Kelsey shares what aspects of gut health are important to optimize before becoming pregnant, the role the microbiome plays, and how to support your gut before, during, and after pregnancy. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Do you ever experience vaginal odor, excessive vaginal discharge, or vaginal itching? Do you want to support your vaginal microbiome before becoming pregnant, after IVF, or before or after birth? Then check out the Womanhood Wellness mini course, Rebalance Your Vaginal Microbiome, created by me, Dr. Leah. In this course, I teach you the lifestyle and dietary habits to help shift the microbiome into a healthy state, my quick guide to healing your gut, and my herbal and nutritional supplement protocol I use in practice to help women rebalance their vaginas and eliminate unwanted symptoms. This is a key step no matter where you are along the womanhood or motherhood journey. Our lady parts need love and attention too. To check it out, visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/vagina and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off an already affordable offering. Again, visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/vagina and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Okay, back to the show. Dr. Kelsey Stang is a licensed naturopathic physician who runs a thriving clinical practice focused on reproductive health and fertility. Through her Fertile Future program, she guides couples into healthy pregnancies through fertility education, healing hormonal imbalances, and helping couples conceive with confidence. She has consulted with medical professionals worldwide on hormone diagnostics, up-to-date treatment options, and research. Dr. Kelsey, thank you so much for joining me and for being available to chat about the microbiome and gut health. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, before we dive into our topic, can you just tell us a little bit about you and why you either got into naturopathic medicine or why the microbiome or gut health is a passion of yours? Can you just share that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the shorter story, right? We kind of all have our come to naturopathic medicine stories, but I would say the shorter story is that I was struggling with my own gut issues and skin issues, and my cycles were really irregular when I was in naturopathic medical school, and we're learning all of the alternative options and kind of mind opening solutions, right, to so many different things. And I was like, gosh, I really wonder if my birth control that I was taking at the time that my pediatrician had put me on when I was really young for heavy periods was like contributing in some way to my symptoms. So it's like, I'm just going to stop taking it and see what happens. And nothing changed. Like it wasn't the thing, right? Because it was so much more of the underlying issues. And particularly when it comes to gut health, why I'm super passionate about that was because I had struggled for so many years with constipation and thought it was totally normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't everyone just go to the bathroom a few times a week? Like, it was totally mm-hmm. normal, right? We don't talk about those things enough, especially as yep. women, I think. And so, you know, I started seeing a naturopathic doctor for my periods and my hormones because I thought everything was off there. And she was like, actually, if we fix this thing, like the root of really what's impacting so much else in your body, then everything will probably get better. And it totally did. You know, we worked wow. on gut health, and I had SIBO at the time, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And once we really healed my digestive system and function, which I think, you know, we can get into this too, but there's this like this idea that like we'll forever just have fine gut health if we heal it once, which is mm-hmm. not the case too, right? Mm-hmm. So I should rephrase that I'm consistently and continuously working on optimizing my gut health. But in that stage of life, at least, you know, we really optimized my gut health. My hormones got so much more stable. My cycles were so much healthier. And I got pregnant in a time when we weren't like really optimally trying to get pregnant. It just kind of happened in a way that I think my body was really healthy from all of the mm-hmm. year plus of work that I was really doing at the time.
That's amazing. Can you share just a little bit, because we'll go into details, about kind of what was the root for you, or roots? There are probably a few things.
Yeah.
I think when we say get to the root, people are like, well, what does that mean? You know, especially if they're not trained in naturopathic medicine to understand what that means.
Yeah, totally. So I think the SIBO was a big component of it. The bacteria in my small intestine was really out of balance, which was most likely a result of stress, right? Naturopathic medical school. It's very stressful. I was also teaching hot yoga at the time, like 5 days a week. I look back sometimes at my calendar from that time in my life. I like still have my old planners, and I was like 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day, just nonstop. Yeah. So stress was a big component of it. So we worked a lot on, you know, the microbiome physical piece of my health, but also what were the practices that I had in place. Like I thought, right, I was doing yoga, I was teaching yoga, I was meditating, but I was still really in a high level, you know, pressure, stress space in my life. So really, and that's such a good question about like, what is the root of it? Because I think too, we can have like a surface understanding of what the root cause is, but it's until we make those really deeper shifts in how we're approaching our health and our self-care and our relationships and so many other things, that that's really where the big shifts happen for our health.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I feel like it's like an onion. It's like Shrek. Oh, yeah. Ogres are like onions, and so is our health and healing, because, you know, some people will say, oh, the root cause of your, you know, symptom is a hormonal imbalance. And it's like, okay, well, that's really just a symptom. You know, there's what's at the root of the hormonal imbalance, and maybe it's the microbiome, or maybe it's inflammation, but what's at the root of that inflammation, and what's at the root, you know, and you get to the root, and at least in my practice, I feel the roots that I've identified are mental, emotional stressors and traumas, some sort of like infection or some sort of, you know, microbial or toxicant imbalance, right? That's like present. And those are kind of like at the bottom of it. It's like it kind of boils down to those two things, and then dietary stuff, right? Like if you're not eating foods, or you're not able to digest those foods, which has other roots. So yeah, it's really interesting. But a part of the root cause, especially with gut health stuff, is the microbiome. So can you speak to us about what the microbiome is and the role that it plays?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that there was also recently an episode you released about the vaginal microbiome. So this is going to be a fun little like, yeah, similarities when we're talking about the microbiome, as you always talked about before. But it's essentially a diverse ecosystem of bacteria, and we can have microbiomes, right, in multiple places of our body. Our eye has its own microbiome, our mouth, our gut, our vagina, our skin. And I love the like big picture understanding of when we're thinking about our gut health and the microbiome of our digestive system. The skin and the gut are really the two organ systems that are most exposed to our outside world. When you think about that. Mm-hmm. So our skin has so many layers of barriers and so much, you know, in place to protect it from, you know, cells or whatever it might be, bacteria, viruses, things like that. And it works really well, right? Most of those bacteria and viruses are going to come through our eyes, our nose, our mouth when we're inhaling them, which is going to cut further down into our body. That's sort of a tangent. But essentially the microbiome, it refers to this diverse ecosystem of bacteria, and particularly for the gut, it's so important for, just like you said there, like absorbing and metabolizing vitamins and nutrients is one of the big roles that the gut microbiome and the bacteria there particularly play, as well as influencing the immune system. So it can be a big source of inflammation if there's an imbalance in the bacteria, but they also play you know, good bacteria can play a big role in making sure that bad bacteria aren't overgrowing, right? So it's this constant play of the bacteria and how they're engaging within the system to ultimately maintain a level of homeostasis for the body.
That's amazing. Oh, thank you for that. I think it more people maybe know now, but I remember a couple of years ago, I used to hold workshops where we talk about how many more bacteria there are than human cells in the body. And I think that is just really shocking to people because at least our generation, you know, we were raised with being afraid of germs. And, you know, we have this idea, I think, until you understand the microbiome that we are just ourselves and there are germs out there that we don't want to touch. So we need to wash our hands and bleach everything. And it's just like, that's not the case. We actually co-inhabit with trillions and trillions of bacteria. And the more that we study and learn, they really impact our health on every level. So we're going to be talking a lot about gut health today, but can you speak a little bit to the microbiome and just the different ways that it impacts our health? I mean, obviously gut health, but are there any other places that it impacts us?
You mean outside of the gut? Just yeah, general like microbiome.
Mm-hmm. Fertility or pregnancy or the gut, I guess, and how it's connected or just how it impacts us, right? If it's healthy or unhealthy.
Yeah. So I think to put it simply, I think that our microbiome is impacting all aspects of our health. And I love that relation that you just made of like, we think we're separate from nature, but we're actually really just animals, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talk with a lot of people when they get, like, let's say we do a stool test and it comes back that they have a parasite. The question is always like, where did this parasite come from? Like, how can I avoid getting it in the future? And it's usually like a conversation of like, actually there's like parasites everywhere, not to like freak anyone out significantly, but we have to build up our resilience, our immune, our gut immune system has to be really strong and able to manage those things because we are essentially animals. We like to think that we're like cleaner or separate from nature, but we are still in communion with nature. We eat vegetables, we eat, you know, plants that grow in the earth and the soil and whatnot. So the microbiome really does impact, I think, so many aspects of our health. In particular, I see it with fertility during pregnancy and postpartum. And we can kind of break those segments down if that would be helpful in terms of like, yeah, how it impacts fertility. We can start there.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And also in the relation to gut health, because you know, it's really hard to not talk about the gut when you're talking about things. And that's something we didn't talk a lot about on our previous episode. So anything that you can pull the gut into these conversations too.
Yeah. Okay. One fun fact to start from that I think a lot of people forget is that our mouth is also part of our digestive system. So our oral microbiome, while it's somewhat separate, like we'll have different species in our mouth than in our gut, there is a lot of crossover. You know, digestion starts in the mouth, and we really want to think about, like, if we were to look inside our body at our intestinal lining, we would want it to look like the inside of our lip, right? It's like that healthy, red, pigmented, juicy mucosa. So when we think about our whole intestinal lining and our, you know, whole digestive system top to bottom, we can't forget the mouth.
That's such a good point. Yes.
Yeah. So when it comes to fertility, particularly, or really the childbearing years, I really like to think about the impact of the gut microbiome specifically on inflammation, hormones, because it plays a big role in hormone balance, and nutrient status. Those are kind of the three ways that I like to focus in on, or that I see the gut microbiome impact fertility. So when it comes to absorbing nutrients, let's start with that one. There are certain bacteria that are required to absorb nutrients from certain foods that we eat. And without that bacteria diversity in our gut, we risk not being able to absorb the nutrients of the foods that we're eating. So we could make these really amazing dietary changes, right? We read online amazing ways to support our nutrition for fertility, and we get on board. We do a 21-day fertility diet reset or whatever. Like, there's so many things, right? And without the sound foundation of really good gut health and microbial stability, then we risk maybe not being able to reap all the benefits of the good dietary changes that we're making.
Oh, that's so huge. Yeah. And I again, it's a part I would say everything on this podcast is things no one ever talks about. That's a huge part, is I just think people assume, oh, I'm eating this food, I'm putting it in my mouth, therefore I'm getting the nutrients. And that is not the case, unfortunately, for so many people, because you aren't what you eat, you are what you absorb and assimilate, right?
100%.
I learned that in school. So amazing. So the type of bacteria, and I mean, can you speak to that? Like, how would anyone know if their bacteria is good or not, if you're absorbing your nutrients? Are there clues that someone might not be absorbing their nutrients?
Yeah, I mean, kind of simple ones to think about would be if you have a really like fast transit time, as we would talk about it, right? Is if you like eat a meal and then, you know, very soon after you're having to use the bathroom and go poop, right? Really quickly eliminating foods. If you see undigested food in your stool, if your stool is just mushy, like less, an easy thing to do would be to look up the Bristol stool chart. Mm-hmm. You can Google it if you're listening right now and have access to that, and really see where your bowels typically lie on that chart so that you know how it's impacting. We can use our poop, if you will, as a clue into how we're absorbing or digesting foods. And then if you also have like chronically low nutrient levels on testing, if you have thyroid issues is another one where we really see vitamin or mineral imbalances impacting thyroid stability. If you're constantly tired, if you have trouble sleeping, if you have anxiety or mood issues, all of it can really be clues to. I talk all the time about how symptoms are really just messages from our body that there's something off, right? And we need to look in a little bit closer, peer in to see what is off. And if it is a nutrient deficiency, that I'm always looking at, how are we absorbing? How are we absorbing foods?
Yeah. Oh, that's so important and so key, because with fertility and then subsequently pregnancy, getting enough nutrients is so important. Mm-hmm. I'm in that stage right now and I'm kind of freaking out. I'm like, I hope my baby's getting enough nutrients, because it's hard when you're sick and stuff. But okay, so you talked about the assimilating nutrients, and then hormones and inflammation. Were those the other two with fertility?
Yep. So inflammation is kind of an easy segue for that, right? So if there's chronic infections, we kind of talked about, and you kind of mentioned, is like one of the main root causes, is like whether it's mental, emotional, or chronic infection. If there is an overgrowth of like the bad bacteria, and I'm trying to like move away from, let's say the...
I know, it's so hard because it's so easy to explain it to patients that way.
It is. But it isn't opportunistic. So black and white.
Opportunistic. I know. Yes. They're opportunistic. It's like, yep. I always use the analogy of weeds. It's like a dandelion in and of itself isn't bad, but if your whole yard is dandelions, like that's not good,
right? Oh, I love
right?
that. I love that so much. It's so true. Yeah. I mean, one dandelion is fun.
Yeah, exactly. Until you spread the seeds everywhere, which I used to do as a kid, and I feel so bad about it.
Oh, yeah. My kids are really in that stage of life.
Blowing
right now.
The it's seeds everywhere. Thing. I'm just like, oh.
Yes. So exactly. So if we have, you know, an imbalance, let's say like less of the beneficial bacteria and overgrowth of the opportunistic bacteria, then that can create a state of inflammation where the immune system is hyper responsive to, hey, something's wrong. We get almost 70% of our immune system is in our gut. Mm-hmm. With the bacteria balance, with, you know, immune cells themselves. So there's a continual communication happening in the digestive system with regard to, hey, okay, everything's fine. Like, we can calm those immune signals. We don't have any big jobs to do today, right? Or, oh my gosh, this bacteria is wreaking havoc on, you know, this section of the distal, you know, ileum or whatever it might be, like some section of the intestines where we're going to have to increase that immune response in order to fight it off, in order to create that homeostasis and that balance. So creating a space in the gut where ideally, right, what should I be striving for here is where we have a good balance of the good bacteria to help manage any opportunistic bacteria going haywire. Mm-hmm. And then that can really help manage the inflammation over time.
I love that. Yeah. So opportunistic or pathogenic, like we use those two terms for people who don't know. And it's tricky because bacteria can be a true pathogen. And those are typically the bacteria that a conventional doctor might catch, right? We have patients all the time who say, I went to the doctor and they might have symptoms of IBS, let's say, and they said everything's normal because mm-hmm. they did a stool test and checked for like Giardia and Salmonella, and, you know, like the classic pathogens. And what's tricky about the microbiome is, just like you mentioned, we have opportunistic bacteria that by themselves aren't pathogens, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're like Salmonella, but when they have an overgrowth or an imbalance, that's what causes the inflammation. And that's a differing way of treating gut health that we have in naturopathic mm-hmm. and functional medicine that isn't seen as much in the conventional model, and why so many people with gut issues, unfortunately, don't get helped, because it's a nuanced understanding. It's not this clear, like, you have a clear, obvious disease that is diagnosable mm-hmm. or this pathogen. And so I think that's important for people to understand, that when we talk about inflammation, you don't necessarily have something like Salmonella. It could be something that's actually not a bad bacteria. It's just in the wrong place, or it's in the wrong amount. It's overgrowth. And that's a key piece.
Yeah. And I love that so much. You put that so well. And that also kind of piggybacks on, like, we don't always just have digestive symptoms cluing us mm-hmm. in to the fact that there are imbalances within that microbiome, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like I mentioned earlier, it can be mood symptoms. It can be really intense PMS. It can be irregular cycles. It can be insomnia. It can be so many things. Acne that is like not even related to digestion. So I'm always really clear when I'm getting an intake, right? Of like, how's your digestion? Oh, it's fine. And then we really pinpoint really specific questions to really get an insight into like, how is it really?
Exactly. Or painful periods. That's one that I used to work with a lot. You know, a lot of painful periods are inflammatory based, and the inflammation can come from the microbiome. And again, it's like so few people think, oh, my periods are painful. I wonder what's going on with the gut bugs.
Totally.
Totally. It's just like a big leap for like the way that we think about health. But in once you learn it, you're like, oh, they're totally connected in every way.
They are so much. And even if you think about like structurally, like the large intestine, the large bowel lays on top or behind the uterus.
Yeah.
So like there is, even though they're separate, there is research has shown more and more that there is this like crosstalk that can happen between, in particularly those organ systems. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So then, speaking of painful periods and other things, hormones was the third thing that you were talking about. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So one of my favorite words as a doctor that I love talking about is the estrobilome. It feels like it's like intergalactic connection to my body.
I love that.
Anyways, so the estrobilome is really a specific group of bacteria that inhabit the digestive system that are responsible for metabolizing hormones, specifically estrogen, which is where we have the estrobilome in there. Mm-hmm. So when we're thinking about the impact that gut health can have on hormones, that is one of the most specific ways that I see, in addition to the fact that like inflammation and nutrients are also really important for hormone balance, right? The estrobilome itself can impact the way that we're breaking estrogen down, so that if it's not working well, let's say I should take a step back. So we have three main phases of how we are going to break estrogen down. Two of them happen in the liver. Phase one, phase two, estrogen metabolism happening in the liver. The third phase of breaking estrogen down, where it's going to be packaged up and ready to be released out of the body through our poop, is going to be happening in our digestive system. So there's a particular enzyme in the gut that's helping this process along, that is influenced by the bacteria in the gut, that if it's not up to par, right, if there's not the good diverse bacteria that we want in the gut, then what happens is that third phase of estrogen metabolism doesn't happen as well, and the estrogen recycles through the system. So then we get more, estrogen dominant symptoms. There's specific research in the estrobilome particularly impacting conditions like endometriosis and PCOS, mm-hmm. where we have just kind of these, like, think of them as like haywire estrogen symptoms, where it's really fluctuating a lot and having a lot of different impacts on the body. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways. I think why I like to talk about them in framework of nutrient absorption and inflammation and then hormones is because they're really all connected. In terms of, the impact that the gut can have on hormones.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's so funny because all of us – well, not all of us. I can't say that. But many of us that go into medicine or naturopathic medicine or the healing arts in general are because we've had our own struggles. And it makes us very passionate, and we're the ones that, stay up late reading the research or dive deeper into understanding things because we ourselves are struggling. And I have always struggled with estrogen metabolism. I feel like I have all the factors against me, like the genetic SNPs, and I've had issues with my gut in the past. And I am actually curious if it's why my pregnancy nausea is so bad, because I just have such a hard time getting rid of things. I just, so it's very real. And the enzyme that you mentioned, I'm assuming you're talking about beta-glucuronidase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that something that someone can test? Like if someone was wanting to optimize before pregnancy, they wanted to, either find out if they have a gut issue or are just curious to optimize, is there a way to test for these things? Like, can you test for that enzyme or your gut microbiome or inflammation or anything to know if there's something going on?
Yeah, great question. Yes, definitely. I love testing. It really helps give us that specific thing that we're focusing on. I do a lot of stool testing in my practice, and that is one way that you can test the microbiome and beta-glucuronidase, like you mentioned, kind of in one fell swoop. I also do a lot of hormone testing and particularly with the Dutch test. So using more like dried urine. So we're really getting to see how we're metabolizing estrogen. So if estrogen dominance, let's say, is the primary concern, or like really like convinced that hormone imbalance is happening, then we can also use the Dutch test as a way to clue in to how healthy that third phase of estrogen metabolism is working, kind of by process of elimination and looking at phase one and phase two estrogen metabolism, and then also estrogen levels, right? All three estrogen levels are going to be tested on the Dutch test. So those are the two ways that I'm most familiar and recommend a lot of my patients to really assess, what does my gut health look like? What is the microbiome diversity? We're not able to see all trillions of bacteria on a stool test, but we're looking at the most clinically relevant ones on a panel and the beta-glucuronidase level. And I love also being able to see what the gut secretory IgA, that like main immune system in the gut, how that is working. So getting a really comprehensive picture, of gut health and hormones can really clue into specific ways to support the fertility path into, like you say, into pregnancy, into that shift postpartum and so much more. Cause gut health, maintaining gut health, I think is like a continual evolution, right?
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. A strong and healthy microbiome in your digestive tract, your skin, and your vagina are all needed for a healthy pregnancy and to set your baby on a path for optimal health. Needed's pre and probiotic includes clinically studied spore-forming and non-spore-forming probiotics and prebiotics, the things that feed bacteria, including polyphenols. Some of my favorite components of this formula are the bacillus or spore-forming bacteria that are incredibly helpful for gut health. Lactobacillus acidophilus, rhamnosus, and reuteri are all very helpful for the vaginal microbiome. And Saccharomyces boulardii is one of the important strains that I often recommend to anyone who has to take an antibiotic to help replenish their flora. There's a lot more included in this formula, but those are some of my favorite parts. If you're looking for a well-rounded and incredibly supportive probiotic, this is it. Check it out at thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show. So what's your favorite test right now, your favorite stool test?
I use the GI map.
Okay. Yeah. I alternate between that one and GI effects from Genova.
Yep. I like
back and forth. Same. It's like so hard. I'm like, I don't know which one's better. They like are kind of different in different ways, and I've gone back and forth, but it's fun. I always love asking people about what tests they're using. Okay. So if someone, let's say, was trying to get pregnant and they did a stool test, they did a Dutch test working with someone like you, what are some of the things that you're going to do to actually help them? Because I feel like healing your gut, it's so it feels so mysterious. And also, mm-hmm. you know, there's certain things where people, there's so many practices that we can do that can help with gut health, but it's so hard, at least for me and our profession, when we're not working on the microbiome, it feels like you're not actually making a change, totally. You know? And so you can eat more, you know, vegetables and things like that, which is actually part of the microbiome. But what other things do you do to help with gut health?
Yeah, such a good question. So I like to start with the foundations, because a lot of times mm-hmm. it comes to that first. If we have a good foundation on, you know, small practices in our day-to-day life that are improving our gut health, and then that's going to set the stage for us to be able to really do effective, deeper work. Mm-hmm. So just like you mentioned, eating more diverse plants and foods from the earth can be a really important way to optimize your microbiome and set that foundation. I usually recommend trying to eat 30 different plant-based foods a week. So that includes fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds, herbs and spices. But it's kind of fun to keep track of, if you will, the different foods that you're eating throughout the week. And that shift of adding more plant-based foods is really going to help take away from the ease, if you will, or the frequency of eating processed foods, which can yeah. be problematic for the microbiome in many ways. Mm-hmm. Another couple foundations that I often talk about is eating slower. So slowing down when we're eating, taking a full deep breath before taking your first bite of food. I know, like, as a mom, this was a huge, like, red light to me of, like, how quickly I was just like, I remember, I won't ever forget the first time my husband and I actually went on a date after we had my son, and I, like, wolfed my food down, and I'm usually a pretty slow eater. And he was like, hey, like, we have time, you know, we don't have to rush through this meal, yeah. especially as a parent. There's just that, like, yeah, mm-hmm. You're always like waiting for the next thing to happen. So you got to eat while you can. So I really started at that time a practice of setting my spoon or my fork down between each bite until my palate is done. And then I can take my next bite. And right, those are like small changes that we can make that make such a big impact, that's helping my digestive enzymes have time to get secreted and helping that whole absorption process happen from top to bottom, or top mm-hmm. to middle, really, while I'm eating, top to upper half, yep. first yep. half of eating. And then also, like, paving the way and modeling for my kids what it is like to have a healthy relationship with mealtime, yeah. which I think is also really helpful.
I love that.
Yeah. And then the other foundation that I talk about a lot is adding in more fiber. So mm-hmm. fiber is going to be fuel for the good bacteria. And if there is an overgrowth of bad bacteria, the fiber can also fuel the bad bacteria. Mm-hmm. So if you add more fiber into your diet and you realize, oh my gosh, this is not helping, I feel worse than before, that could be a huge, clear message from your body that there's more deeper work to do. Mm-hmm. And so onto that deeper work is usually starting with testing. I like to know what I'm working with, because yeah. like you said, it's so hard to determine just based on symptoms which bacteria is out of balance. Is there enough good bacteria? Is there, you know, one of the things I see a lot is a low or non-detectable acromantia, which is a particular bacteria, beneficial bacteria in the gut that contributes to a stable secretion of mucus in the intestinal lining. To help preventing leaky gut, essentially.
Oh my goodness, that's great. I actually didn't know that. And I was going to go look at my stool test that I did a couple, like, last year, and see where my acromantia is.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's what I'm always really looking at to clue in, you know, coming back to nutrient absorption. If we have leaky gut, or intestinal permeability is the other term for that, then we risk not really fully absorbing the nutrients that we want, because they can seep through that intestinal lining, get into the bloodstream, which is another way that we get a pretty significant immune response to foods mm-hmm. that eating.
Yeah.
So that acromantia is one I'm really looking at to make sure that that's really healthy. And then really individualizing the treatment based on what we see on testing. So mm-hmm. Let's say there's low bacteria
I'm usually recommending a really potent probiotic to really help shift. I use a lot of spore-based probiotics in my practice mm-hmm. to really help shift mm-hmm. the foundation of that intestinal function. And then, you know, dietary changes, mealtime changes, all of those things as well. If there's overgrowth of bacteria, which is trickier in the season of trying to get pregnant, because then there usually becomes this time frame where we have to say, okay, there's these things we have to get rid of. mm-hmm. And we're going to have to take a little break from yeah. actively trying to get pregnant here, because we want to make sure that the environment, of course, that sperm is growing, or that egg and sperm are growing in, is going to be mm-hmm. really healthy. So sometimes it's taking a little break while we really target with antimicrobial herbs or whatever it is that, you know, is specific to what's come up on the test.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the hardest things for me in my practice with fertility, is seeing a couple realizing, you know, they've been trying for a while and then evaluating their health and realizing that they've got some major imbalances mm-hmm. and that in order to really truly deal with them, we have to take a break from trying. And that is really, really hard to have the conversation with a couple, because that's the last thing anyone wants to do.
Right.
Who's desperate for a baby. But if you're able to take a break, because a lot of the things that we give sometimes to help rebalance things like the microbiome or even hormones for some people are just not safe if you become pregnant. So it is a little tricky, and that's why preconception is so important. Yes. It's just like so hard to get it to through people to do this work before you start trying, because it's just, you know, you don't have to take a break, or you're not like so far into your journey when you have to stop. And so, yeah, it just, it's like, how do we get people to know about it?
I am right there with you. I struggle with the same internal conflict like every day of like, oh, like if only we had done this like 6 months ago, but 6 months ago, not even on people's radar. And
I know
it really does set the stage for going into pregnancy with so much more confidence and ease in the process when we know that we've like done the work and we feel really healthy and really vital.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I want to ask you about food intolerances, because I know this is kind of, I don't know, I would say a hot topic right now, and one I really struggle with personally, because at least in my practice with my patients and myself personally, I have definitely seen a true impact of certain foods on my health. And there's also a big movement in the culture of like not restricting foods from people, especially trying to conceive or who are pregnant. Mm-hmm. Things like dairy and gluten and, you know, all of these other things that are like classic triggers, eggs. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on food intolerances. Do you think that they play a role in gut health? And how do you deal with that with someone who's trying to conceive or is pregnant? Mm-hmm.
That's like the golden question.
It's something I'm really struggling with on a personal level, just to share, because for anyone like listening, and we might air this later, but I've been so sick and nauseous, and I have just wanted to eat these like random foods that are all comfort foods. And a lot of them are my classic food intolerances that I have found for myself personally don't make me feel very good. And I have felt so terrible in pregnancy, but it's so hard to tell what's pregnancy and what's food intolerance. And I'm trying to not restrict. I'm trying to eat things like dairy and stuff, but then I feel so sick from it. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. You know, even myself being a doctor, it's hard to live it personally. So I would just actually love your input on this in general.
It's really hard. And it's, I think like, especially the first trimester is an experience of its own. Yeah. And I usually I'm going to go out of order here. Like for first trimester, I usually recommend to eat what you want. If you mm-hmm. know it's something like okay, so there are different types of food intolerances and different types of food allergies.
Yeah.
If someone knows that they have a true food allergy, let's say to peanuts or soy or something mm-hmm. like that, obviously they're probably going to be very unlikely to eat those during pregnancy. Yeah. Usually that's like a long-standing thing. If it's more of a food intolerance, let's say you've done like a food intolerance test with a provider even years ago, and maybe you've been avoiding particular foods that came up on that panel, and now you're pregnant and that's all you want to eat. Mm-hmm. I usually say, let's do all that we can to support your gut health. because it really comes down, well, ideally I'm working with them before they're pregnant. Let's say that, right? But the process that I was kind of talking about a minute ago with that bacteria acromantia and the intestinal lining tone and stability, that's really what I like to work on before getting pregnant so that we can go into a pregnancy and have a little bit more freedom with regard to what we're eating, because we've done the healing for the intestinal lining. So we're not going to have those, dairy as a classic, you know, food molecule that's going to secrete through that, any openings in the intestinal lining. And it does cause us to not feel well. It can cause like a range of symptoms, right? So I'm curious for you to look back at your test and see if that is off.
Me too. Is acromantia something you can take like in a probiotic, or it's not very helpful to do?
There are like new formulations coming out on the market with that. Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience using them with my patients. I usually use things like amino acid therapies, like glutamine, probiotics. Targeted probiotics can be really helpful for acromantia, and then nutritional changes.
Okay. And then the acromantia just kind of improves based on those other changes.
Exactly.
Cool. I'm very curious to look back on the test. I know I've historically had a lot of imbalances of, you know, overgrowths of certain bad bacteria, and it's, my gut health has always been a struggle. But again, coming back to the food intolerance and why it's so tricky, you know, I had symptoms my whole life with gut stuff, and until I started understanding the world of food intolerances, I didn't realize that a lot of my gut issues were from eating certain foods. And I know there's a difference for some people between like raw dairy and conventional dairy, and there's obviously a difference there. But with my last daughter, I was so sick until I realized that I was reacting to eggs.
Yeah.
And I was trying to eat eggs every day, trying to get choline and all the things. And I realized that that was making me so sick, and it was why the second trimester I was even more sick than the first and threw up like constantly until I stopped eating eggs. And you know, it's tricky. And I was actually just like on Instagram earlier today and was seeing some pregnancy nutrition advice, and it is really tricky because I mean, would you say that there are true food intolerances, or is that just a sign of a gut issue that is unresolved?
Yeah, that was kind of going to be my next thought. You, I think we're like on the same wavelength for this right now, which is I also sometimes do more true food intolerance testing with folks. And that's going to be like your categories like eggs or dairy or grains or potatoes, things like that. And that can really also be a huge game changer in terms of when we take away that true intolerance, mine is egg, then we do really decrease the inflammation in the body.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that in practice, and I've seen that, I mean, I've experienced it personally. I've done so many different tests, but for me, it's been an experiment of introducing, taking it away, introducing, and proving to myself over and over again what foods impact me in certain ways. But yeah, it has made me question, like during pregnancy, of, you know, I need to be eating eggs and dairy and all of these sources of vitamin A and all these things for my baby. But then, okay, if I'm really having a food intolerance, am I causing more harm because of the inflammation? And it's a tricky place to be, and it feels so restrictive. And when you have food aversions and nausea, it's just like you feel trapped, and, you know, it's just tricky. And so my question, is just, are food intolerances definitely a part of the gut health, or is that just a symptom in and of itself?
Yes and yes. It's really like a chicken or the egg situation, I think, because both can be contributing. If there's intestinal permeability and dysbiosis, that imbalance in the microbiome, then we are more likely to have reactions to foods. If there are food intolerances or food, you know, and already a set up immune system reaction or response to particular foods that we're eating, then that's going to also cause intestinal permeability and gut issues. It's really a holistic perspective of gut support, in my opinion. And what I really try to do is really hit it at all angles, right? Because especially in this season of life, like you're saying, we want to do everything right. We want to be eating the right foods. We want to be drinking all the water. We want to be measuring our cycle. We want to be exercise, like all the things right. And so when we're like in this crossing this threshold of like, ooh, I know I shouldn't be eating this, but I really want it. And I don't want anything else. It's just, it's the only thing I want. I will never forget standing in my kitchen, just eating milkshakes was like all I wanted when I was pregnant with my second kid. And I'm like hiding it from my toddler because I didn't want him eating a milkshake every day. And it was like very healthy milkshake. I will say it was like coconut milk, whatever. It was like,
yeah,
a mocked milkshake. But still, yeah, it was like that like guilt that we have almost of like eating mm-hmm. that we shouldn't be eating. And I'm all for like expanding the diet and not having restrictions, but if there are things, in my opinion, that we feel are don't make us feel good or that we know from past, it's not like just coming into a pregnancy, which I should take that back, our microbiome changes in pregnancy. And
yeah, will you talk about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, we get into a pregnancy and some shifts happen within the microbiome that we might not be as reactive to a certain food as we were before. Yeah. So it does require quite a bit of like, you know, connection to self in the sense of understanding our symptoms, understanding what we need, that intuitive, you know, response. I think we all have the capacity to be very in tune with what our bodies wants mm-hmm. when we really listen into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
So yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I think the other thing to remind people of, which is something that I have to remind myself of, is that sometimes when it comes to food, the quality and the type is different. So dairy in particular is one that I can think of where I think I see this in my patients too, where maybe they've been restricting a certain food and then they can eat it. And so they are going out and eating it all over the place and everything. And like an organic, you know, homemade sourdough bread is probably very different than eating, you know, pizza from Pizza Hut. And, you know, raw dairy is probably very different than conventional dairy. And for some people, they might be able to handle those higher quality forms. I'm still trying to figure out if that's the case for me prior to pregnancy. I wasn't even able to handle real organic sourdough or real raw dairy. But, you know, I was just so reactive to it. But this is something that is for some people, they totally can. So I just want to remind anyone listening, eggs is a trickier one because
it is.
It's like even like pasture raised local eggs, like I've gotten them from Dr. Morgan and I still feel kind of weird from them. But yeah, okay. So that's great. So the microbiome changes for some people in pregnancy where they can handle things more, what other changes can happen with the microbiome?
Yeah. We're still really researching this right now. Like there isn't a lot of really good, clear, definitive, this is how the microbiome changes because our microbiome is an ecosystem that is constantly changing throughout our life. So it's like almost impossible to measure one woman from the next who in pregnancy and how their microbiome changes because the set of like the foundational microbial pieces are different body to body. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like our DNA, right?
Yep.
So when I think about pregnancy microbiome is we know that there's a shift, right? There's a huge shift in hormones. We have high hormone levels, which is going to kind of require changes to the microbiome. And we're eating different. Like it's very unusual for someone to like eat one way and go into a full pregnancy and not change the way that they're eating.
Yeah. So we're I wish it was me. I wish that could have been me.
I know. You'll get there. I have zero doubts that in the next few weeks we're going to be like, oh my gosh, this sounds so good. I want a salad.
Perfect. I can't wait for that moment.
Setting that up for you right now.
Thank you.
Yes. But yeah, so we see that in pregnancy, there's going to be lots of changes in the body that are going to influence the microbiome. And what we know, like from the other end of the spectrum, is that the maternal microbiome, the bacteria diversity for the mother mm-hmm. while baby is in utero, and I hope this isn't going to stress you out. I don't think it will.
It's okay.
is important for developing baby's immune system. Right? Yeah. You know this. Like we see in research definitely that a more diverse maternal microbiome helps prevent things like atopy in children for mm-hmm. that. So that's going to be eczema, allergies, and asthma, most that trio. We also see that a diverse microbiome can prevent complications in pregnancy, things like preeclampsia, fetal growth restriction issues, gestational diabetes, excessive weight gain during pregnancy, and premature gut health premature birth have all been linked mm-hmm. to poor gut health in pregnancy.
Yes.
So this kind of weaves back to our united efforts to really inspire preconception health in the sense that when we go into the pregnancy with a foundation of good gut bacteria, then we can do our best, right, to prevent things like that. And then postpartum is the other area where we really just don't have a lot of good research. Most postpartum moms aren't like wanting to go in and do testing. They're like, right, busy snuggling their babies and other things. But there is what I like to focus on for postpartum is that we know that there's a huge mood shift, like a huge mental emotional shift that can happen in that season of parenthood. And of course, there's like situations that are, right, we're not getting as much sleep. We don't have any time to ourselves. We're constantly being needed in one way or another. And that can be really tiring for our emotional body. But at the same time, we know that the gut and the brain have a huge connection in terms of their communication. So if there are, let's say, if there is an imbalance in gut bacteria, let's say there's not enough good bacteria, for instance, that can influence our neurotransmitters, which is going to also influence our mood. Which I also talk about for fertility in the preconception journey of like, it's already inherently very stressful. So if we're going into it with poor gut health and imbalanced neurotransmitters, then that already stressful situation is going to be sometimes even more complex for people. So it's really like a whole, I guess just in summary there, like the microbiome in the phases of preconception, pregnancy, postpartum can influence aspects of hormones, mood, and even the health of our future babies.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. So do you have any recommendations for gut health? I know you already shared a few from the fertility space that would be different during pregnancy or postpartum, or in addition to, obviously we're not working on reducing bad bacteria with herbs and things like that. You've already talked about eating fiber and having plant-based foods. Is there any other fun tips or anything like that you can recommend?
Yeah. I mean, I think fiber in pregnancy and postpartum is also really, really important. Not only for fuel for the good bacteria, but also because we want to make sure we're eliminating regularly. And like constipation is a really common symptom of pregnancy. One thing I really like to recommend to my patients if they are having, let's say, first trimester constipation is beets. Beets are really great at helping to keep things moving and help. And that's going to help with hormone metabolism. Maybe this could be something helpful for you if beets sound good. I like to recommend like golden beets because they're typically less like.
More. Yes. Confident. I mean, I used to eat beets all the time, obviously, before pregnancy. I think I've had them once since I was pregnant. But yes, I will definitely bring those back in.
Doing our best when you can. You're like, you can't even say that word right now. No, but beets can be really helpful at keeping things moving. I think that the foundations are really, diversifying plant-based foods. And in that, like where you are, let's say in the first trimester or so, also not adding to the stress of I'm not eating good enough. Because it's super temporary, right? It's the same recommendation I get for when women are unable to take their prenatal for a few weeks, or intermittently during their first trimester, is that you've done the work beforehand. Like your microbiome has been nourished in the preconception time. You've been taking your prenatal, your vitamin, nutrient levels. Like we've been working on all of that to make sure that that's on point and healthy. So going a few weeks, it's like you're on vacation and you forgot your supplements. And you're going to be okay.
You're going to be fine. Yeah, that's so great.
You're off in Italy just eating pizza every day. And it's going to be fine. You'll come back and you'll bounce right back.
Oh my God. I can totally eat pizza in Italy. I can eat anything in Italy. Italy and France are like my favorite places in the whole world. I can eat croissants and eat pizza and have zero dietary issues. And I just don't understand it. It's like, why? Why can't it be like that here? That's amazing. One other fun tip I really like to give people, we talk a lot about fermented food, which can be helpful unless you have something like SIBO, like you mentioned. But I have a hard time, especially now, but even before pregnancy, eating a ton of like sauerkraut just because it's an acquired taste. But I find that taking like a tablespoon of sauerkraut juice is something that can be really helpful and maybe more practical for some people if they can't eat you know, tons and tons of like fermented vegetables, even though I highly recommend that if you can. Mm-hmm. I've noticed even when I've had gut flares or anything like that, if I take a tablespoon of sauerkraut juice, it actually helps to calm mm-hmm. down. We do that when we're about to get sick sometimes. So that's like a fun little tidbit where if you get the sauerkraut, like we really like is it the Callaway? I don't know why. That's like a golf brand. I don't know why I'm thinking that. I don't know. I think I'm thinking of the Apple and Caraway brand, and I can't even think of the name of the sauerkraut. I see it in my fridge, but I'll put it in the show notes. I really like that juice mm-hmm. from that one, but that's another fun little tip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great recommendation. And even things like apple cider vinegar, if you don't have a lot of mm-hmm. heartburn or like, you know, that reflux in pregnancy, then that can be another great way to just keep digestive juices moving in an efficient way mm-hmm. while you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Last question for someone who is pregnant, maybe just listening to this podcast or maybe postpartum, and they're suspecting maybe they have gut issues. Mm-hmm. When would they come see someone like you to do testing? Is it kind of a moot point to do so in pregnancy or even postpartum? I mean, what do you recommend if someone isn't in the fertility and preconception, but they've just realized, oh my gosh, I think I have a gut issue, or maybe they started adding fiber to their life and have gotten really bloated or like it's hurting them? Or what would you tell a pregnant or postpartum woman?
Yeah, really good question. Usually ask a lot of questions and we try and figure out the solution together. Some people really just want to know, and we'll do the test with the understanding that if it comes back with, you know, a lot of bacterial overgrowth or a parasite or something like that, then we're not going to stress out about it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be able to still beneficially influence the gut with, you know, good bacteria good probiotics and things that are safe in pregnancy. Some yeah. people love knowing, right? A lot of my patients are more of the like, very driven, very educated. Like, this is what I need to know this thing so that it can make mm-hmm. me feel more in touch or more connected with my body. And then if that isn't the case, if people are like, no, I do not want to know, like that might stress me out even more, I'm going to wait until things feel like it's the right time, then we usually do, I do a lot of targeted probiotic support in pregnancy, especially in the third trimester, to both mm-hmm. help support the gut microbiome and the vaginal microbiome for delivery and postpartum recovery. So it would be, you know, having support with getting all the foundations in order, like I talked about a bit yeah. on the podcast. And then, yeah, other specific recommendations, you know, nutrition support. A lot of times it's problem solving, like, whatever. I don't like kale salad. Like, what are some other ways we can, you know, integrate kale into the diet or things like that to get that 30 different plant-based foods or, you know, 6 to 9 servings of fruits and veggies a day, when it can, you know. And I'm also yeah. a mom, like I've been through the struggles of pregnancy aversions and whatnot. And so it's figuring out what works for them. But there's usually ways. I can't think of times that there hasn't, but I've ever said just like, well, sorry, you're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's just par for the course, right? That's not the way my brain thinks. Like, there's always some way that we can shift or adjust the system, even if we can't do testing. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I remember I had a patient who she went to Costa Rica and she messaged me and she's like, "I think I got a parasite. Mm-hmm. I need to come in and do testing and we need to like treat this." Mm-hmm. And we do the test and she comes back for her follow-up and she's like, "I'm pregnant." Mm-hmm. Like, it was totally an accident.
So many times. Yep.
And then I'm like going over these results with her and she does have a parasite and she does have all of these like issues. And we're just like, oh my goodness. So it was it was a really interesting pregnancy supporting her because she was really miserable, had a lot mm-hmm. of symptoms. But there are things, like there's a specific probiotic that is really good at reducing a type of bacteria that she had that we used and like some of the pregnancy safe stuff. But it is ideal if we mm-hmm. can work on these things before pregnancy. But it's not impossible. And she went on and had her baby. I was actually at his birth and, you know, he's healthy. And, you know, we just have to keep these things in mind that our body is really resilient.
Yes.
But there's definitely an optimal way to do it. And if you miss that optimal window, the body is still able to survive and make things happen in a positive way a lot of times. So
totally. I mean, we could get a parasite in pregnancy.
You know, totally. Yeah.
And we just adapt our bodies. And that's where, again, like honing in on the preconception care, like when our immune system and our microbiome is stable and, you know, vital and diverse, then we can, you know, weather something like getting a parasite in pregnancy.
Yep.
There are only very few things we can actually control. And if we can like manage those things with ease and curiosity and action, then great. And then there are, you know, way more things that we can't control.
Oh, amazing. I love this. Thank you so much. I feel like gut health is a big piece missing from our podcast. So I'm so happy that we had you on to talk all about it. And where can people find you, learn more about you, work with you? Like, tell us all the things.
Yeah, sure. Instagram is a great place to find me. I am trying to be more active on Instagram because, as a mom, it's like the shuffle, the juggle. I'm like actively trying
What's
to
your
not
handle?
Be on my phone.
Yeah, I know.
It's just my name, Dr. Dr. Kelsey Stang.
Okay, perfect.
And then my website is the same, drkelseystang.com, with information there. I run a Fertile Future, which is a preconception program. So that's kind of the easiest way if you're in that preconception window to work with me. If you're pregnant or postpartum, then it would just kind of be one-on-one support. Mm-hmm. And I work with people all over.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for being on here. You're such a wealth of knowledge and wisdom. And I think this is going to be really helpful for people, me included. I'm going to go look at my stool test and look for acromancia.
Message me your results if you need it.
I will. I'm so curious. I have a feeling they're not good, but Aww. We'll see. awesome. Okay. Well, thank you and have
thank
a great
you so
day.
So much. Yeah, you too.
Did you know that your gut microbiome and digestive health impacts everything from how you feel to the nutrients you are able to absorb to how easily it is to conceive and maintain a healthy pregnancy? And the health of your microbiome impacts your baby's health immensely. If you want to optimize your gut health and microbiome before, during, or after pregnancy, or any time along your womanhood journey, I recommend you check out my mini course, Nurture Your Digestion and Microbiome. I teach you what you need to know to improve your gut health, which means you increase your chances of feeling better, having less inflammation and puffiness, experiencing an improved mood, more balanced hormones, and if you are in the season of becoming a mother, it will greatly support your pregnancy and baby's health. Check it out at www.womanhoodwellness.com/guthealth and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on an already affordable product. Again, visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/guthealth and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now and it starts with you.